Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Grit. Sure, it's mud and dirt and all that. But the all-new Toyota Tundra TRD Pro is redefining grit with unrelenting torque, courtesy of the iForce Max hybrid powertrain, connectivity thanks to an impressive 14-inch touchscreen, and total confidence to tow just about anything, anywhere. Yes, the all-new Toyota Tundra is the new definition of grit. Learn more at toyota.ca.
Hey, Nova Scotia. Looking for ways to show your local love and have fun this winter? Why not visit some fabulous local boutiques and artisan studios? Dine in or get takeout from your favorite restaurant. Maybe hit up a local event. Or even indulge in a night away at a hotel, charming inn, or B&B. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.
From the gutter. I am Mickey.
I'm Blake.
And I'm Brent.
Hello, and I was rethinking how to do this show. Specifically, whenever we come around to recording, you usually say, "What is this show about again?" which means that
I didn't say it this time.
No, it's true. You didn't say it. Exactly. But it means that the format of it wasn't clear enough, and I had an epiphany that really clarified things and should allow us to do a lot of really cool content that, quite frankly, we're very good at.
I'm intrigued.
Yes. So, years ago, we used to work at a tabloid, a junk tabloid, and we were rather good at that high-level gossip shit. But neither of us wanted to deal with it on a real-time basis or, like, living people.
No. Oh, historical gossip? Hilarious.
Exactly.
Real people? No, thank you.
So I thought, okay, well, what is there tons of content of that everyone forgets or doesn't know about? Old gossip.
Marcus Aurelius had an opium addiction.
It's true, actually.
I read this today.
Yeah.
See, there's tons.
So, like, we can do modern gossip, we can do old, ancient gossip. This is a show about
Can we call gossip. It cold goss?
I wish. We can call segments that.
Yes, cold goss. Cold goss is like real old gossip. It's not hot goss.
Yeah.
It's cold goss.
Well, that's how we'll do it. Hot, lukewarm, cold.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So today is a lukewarm gossip story, because everyone involved is dead. But it only occurred in the 20th century.
Tepid goss.
Tepid goss.
Yeah.
Tepid goss.
Tepid goss.
I wish I knew someone whose name was Tepid Goss.
Right? That would be so cool.
Please welcome to the stage.
Tepid goss. The show just got like 100% better, and I really liked it.
And that kid is clearly an art student.
Tepid goss.
Tepid goss.
Yeah.
You may feel wounded about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. From the bottom of my heart, of the only thing close to science in art, history, poli-sci, I am sorry. anyway, but today, so keeping that in mind, the general streamlining of the format, because essentially I said that the first time, and for some reason I just didn't think, like, oh, let's be a tabloid magazine, but for old stories.
Mm-hmm. That's great, though.
Obvious. No, I confused it for... Anyway.
I might actually write things.
Right? Now you've got stuff, because all you have to do is talk about old shit that people
forgot. Exactly. Oh, man. I want to do all three categories next time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great way of doing it. We would...
Yeah.
Tons of content.
Down with this. All right.
So, today, though, we're going to talk about... and I have this all written down. I started writing notes.
Notes.
And it ended up being about 3,000 words that I typed on my phone. Because I kind of spaced into it.
3,000 words... I find it really funny when some people are like, oh my god, writing 1,000 words. And I'm just like, oh, good luck expressing anything.
Right?
Like, that's not enough words.
I recently did a freelance article on the history of the Universal movie monster films. Like, okay. the industry history of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they quoted me for 2,000 words at a price. And I gave them 4,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it's not really a limit. We just didn't want to, like, underpay you. And I'm like, I don't think you understand. I cannot tell this story less than this.
Yeah.
And I'm still happy with your money.
Yeah.
You gave me this money to tell this story. If this would have taken 10,000 words, you would have it.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize.
I've edited your work.
Yes.
I know how much.
Oh, yes.
And I do the same thing.
It's so much more fun.
It is. I'm great at cutting other people's... I'm a great hatchet man.
I'm horrible at it.
Usually
because I'm enjoying it. Usually I'm just enjoying what you're writing. It's just, and then what?
Yeah, I have that temperament. But like, oh no, I need that. From others, I need that.
Hack it down.
Yeah.
But for today's... good starts. Today,
digression, you know, coughing.
You know, I mean, go wherever. Oh, and
having to re-explain the concept of the show. What's the title of the show for those of us who host it and may have forgotten?
Tales from the Gutter.
That's a great title. He expressed in the third episode.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Gutter Talk, you can go Gutter Talk all you want.
I like this. Based on the historic goss nature of the show now. This is good.
It fits better, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
Every age has a gutter.
There you go. There's always this shit.
That's
somewhere.
Everybody poops for this show.
Everybody poops.
Every age has a gutter.
Welcome to Everybody Poops.
The Victorian edition.
The hot goss.
Sorry show. To eavesdrop.
All right. Okay, I'm going to actually start reading the script. And for Brent, who has never actually been here, I believe, for an episode before, if you feel like jumping in on
the
this
show, darling.
Yes, you've been in the credits the entire time. But
it's present in spirit.
Yeah, exactly. So welcome to the show, Brent. Hooray, hurrah. And if you feel like interjecting at any time for any reason whatsoever, by all means do. There is no stupid question, because some of this is very stupid. We've talked about some very goddamn ridiculous things here, and they're all true, and I completely understand if you go, no.
It happens.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about Hollywood fixers and some of their more nefarious methods to keep scandals and the scandalous quiet on and off set.
When we talk about scandals, can at least one of us say, Escándalo.
Escándalo.
Sí.
So, do you know what a fixer is?
Yes.
A person who, like, makes things happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Olivia Pope.
Yeah.
Olivia Pope, yeah. Fixers used to be a lot more blunt in the past than they are today. Whereas a team of dedicated lawyers will, you know, be up your ass in mitts if you screw up a studio's work or image. In the days of old Hollywood, there were instead often singular hard-nosed men who wouldn't hesitate to smack any stars or starlets back in their place. The fixer would be expected to handle just about any problem, thus the term fixer. If an actor was giving you crap, you sent the fixer to straighten them out. If someone was giving the star crap, you sent the fixer to sort them out. Unwanted pregnancies, nosy reporters, union disputes, business disagreements, outright criminal activity to either hide or engage in, you sent the fixer, and the problem would just go away.
I'm sure this is a relic of the past and no longer happens in Hollywood today.
Oh, yes, I'm
yeah,
sure.
See?
Yeah. the Coen Brothers comedy from 2016, Hail Caesar. You guys ever seen it?
No.
It's quite good. It's low-key funny, but...
I like low-key funny.
You know, it's Coen Brothers that no one talks about. So you're like, no, that was a quality film that I'm never going to think about again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. starring Josh Brolin as a character named Eddie Mannix, the fixer for Capitol Pictures in the 40s, as he dealt with a menagerie of diva performers and communist infiltrators. There's a point where a star literally wades into the Pacific and, like, a Soviet sub comes up and he gets in it, and that's, like, the end of the movie, and you're just like, the fuck?
That's a wonderful ending scene.
Yeah.
That's great. I want to see this.
And Channing Tatum, dressed as a sailor, does like a 40s-style dance number.
I'm super there.
Yeah.
That's great.
Where am I? So while the story is fictional, including the actors portrayed in the studio, Eddie Mannix himself was a very real person. Officially the general manager of MGM Pictures, and hands down the most infamous fixer in Hollywood history. So I've gathered some of the many, many Eddie Mannix stories from the wilder days of Tinseltown, and we're going to gawk at some decade after decade for its own entertainment.
I'm down.
All right. Let's start with a simple one. I assume you are at least vaguely aware of the Hollywood starlet Joan Crawford.
Vaguely aware?
Vaguely aware.
This is a gay household. How dare you? No, some of our pets more are gay. They
fire haggers!
Barbara, please.
Co-star, of course, of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, mm-hmm. and many, many, many other things over decades of the golden age of films. After starting
also, at... Elegant and Problematic.
Ooh, yeah. That's a really good segment name for this.
Elegant and Problematic has to be a segment.
Gorgeous. I love it. After starting out as a chorus girl in the 20s.
Okay.
So, during these early years, she took work wherever she could. And at least on one project was, technically speaking, in a pornography. Now, this is like a 20s pornography.
So it's like high five.
Yeah, exactly. It like lasts 30 seconds. You watch in a box someone, high fives, and there's physical contact, and you can see her ankle. But it was a porno. It actually was like a porn.
So somebody jizzed on her ankle. Okay.
There you go. Specifically, it was a film called Velvet Lips.
Yeah.
Terrific name.
That is so gross.
Such a porn name. So the old porn...
Velvet Lips would feel so gross. It'd be so fucking weird. No.
No.
This is terrible. Especially where they're implied to be. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
No.
So the old porn industry was not just like porn and smut. It was also involved in a hell of a lot of criminal extortion. As you would hunt for seemingly up-and-coming stars who you could not only use, but later could become famous, and then you could blackmail them. It was an investment scheme.
Thank God this is all a relic of the past.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Now they do it everywhere.
Ah! Now any idiot
will
be naked.
Well, they did do
it
everywhere. Now that's why they can be blackmailed. So.
This seems to be what happened to Joan. As during the height of her career, MGM caught wind that she had made a porn in her youth. And from all indications, she was underage in the footage when she did it. Yeah.
Well, that's not really her scandal, although of course it would be
It
then.
Would be then, yeah. And it would be deeply embarrassing for the studio, because this is the studio system. She is contracted to them. It's like having a sports player on your team.
Mm-hmm.
You're considered to be them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one and the same. So the possible scandal was enormous for the studio and Crawford. Enter Eddie Mannix. Eddie was an old hand with dealing with extortion from both sides. And Eddie knew that the pornographers often clash with the mob over territory. So Eddie reached out to the mob, one of his many mob contacts, which, being a professional fixer, he absolutely had.
Mm-hmm.
He would have so many. He would be able to in contact with essentially any criminal organization almost even just because, like, it'd be expected. Mm-hmm. Let alone the fact that you can do business with all of them.
Thanksgiving,
Christmas. You have to give cards. Are they sick? You gotta miss them. He and the mob agreed that it would be to their mutual benefit to end the pornographers in question post-haste.
To end them?
To end them.
Oh, dear.
Legend has it Eddie and some mafia toughs visited the pornographers and asked what it would take for them to go away. The extortionists demanded $100,000 in late 1930s money, or about $1.8 million. Mm-hmm. Today.
Fair penny.
A decent amount. Not too much, but still, yeah. Eddie's counteroffer was firm but fair. You get $25,000, and these motherfuckers won't kill you.
That is firm but fair.
The pornographers allegedly accepted, and the film disappeared forever. There's not even a still of it.
It's impressive.
Right? Aside from Hollywood myth and legend, the only documented evidence that ever existed was a $50,000 check Crawford handed over to MGM when she left the studio in 1943. A payment that was not in any regards common when leaving a contract at the end of the contract.
Hmm.
And she was allegedly paying back not only the $25,000 that was covered by the studio, but she had to cover, like, Mannix's fee for doing it and paying off the mob to do it. Mannix was so successful that to this day, Jones' Wikipedia page, which anyone can edit, doesn't include any mention whatsoever of it. It's just been, like, erased.
Weird.
Yeah.
What else has he done? I'm so glad you started with that one.
I know, right?
That's great.
They get kind of more bizarre. And, like, these are the three that stood out to me the most in terms of storytelling, but there are about 40 years worth of Eddie Mannix stories.
How did you find out about this guy?
I just sometimes go looking for things in areas I know. Old gossip mags, new gossip mags, shit like
tepid
that. Tepid gossip mags. I know where it's alleged Robert Downey Jr. Spreads secrets about the industry.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. And if it is him, he's very funny to read.
Nice.
Yeah, especially when you do it in his voice.
Yeah, well, he's a funny fellow anyway. So
yeah.
That makes sense.
So, have either of you heard of the name Ted Healy?
Don't think so.
That's really not a surprise. I bet, though, you've heard of the name The Three Stooges.
Larry, Moe, and Curly.
I don't think... No.
Yeah, Larry, Moe, and Curly. Ted wasn't one of the Stooges. Ted was the guy who created the Stooges.
Okay.
And owned the rights to the original show. So Ted was a vaudeville comedian and ringman. The chief funny guy who would host vaudeville shows and introduce acts, usually telling a few of his own gags along the way. This man was one of the founders of what we now consider to be slapstick comedy. So, like...
Bless him, then.
Yeah, violent physical humor that doesn't actually include violence.
Trout.
Yeah, exactly. It was named by the slapstick, which sounds like you're smacking someone really hard.
Right.
That's the point of the slapstick. Which he developed while traveling with his show in the early 20s, which included comedy, music, acrobats, all kinds
of
stuff.
Like a vaudeville show. Or like a Punch and Judy.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's very much stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Stuff along those lines. You know, the general entertainment that was very popular and traveled at the day. What Healy specialized in was a form of con artist comedy. Not criminal, but like kind of like the way that magicians are
like
kind
a
of like
snake oil salesman.
Yeah, exactly. You're there to be tricked. That's part of it. Where he'd invite a member of the audience up for a simple routine, and that would collapse into absurdity. The joke isn't whatever he's telling the person. The joke is the way that this person is going to react to it.
Okay.
Yeah. The audience members who were invited were all plants, which at the time was called a stooge.
Okay.
So that's where that comes from. And at some point in the mid-20s, a guy
named... The Three Plants isn't nearly as
I know, right? It just doesn't... doesn't have a delicious. Mm-hmm. Where am I?
It is growing on me, though.
It is, right? There it is. You had to have your pun. You had to get it in there. You just
I can't
help yourself.
Sometimes, at some point in the mid-20s, a guy named Mo Howard answered an ad to join the troupe as one of these stooges. So, one guy, Mo Howard. Mo was soon joined by his brother, Shemp Howard, whose specialty was heckling. Namely, if Healy's act started to get dull or the audience wasn't responding to it, Shemp would heckle him and Healy would zing him back with, like, a pre-figured-out routine.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience would become re-engaged.
Mm-hmm.
This show became popular enough that by 1930, Healy was hired by Fox for the comedy Soup to Nuts. It's just the dumbest goddamn... Soup to Nuts.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of this.
Naturally, Healy brought along his troupe, now including a guy called Larry Fine. The film was a moderate success and launched the careers of the Stooges, but not Healy.
Okay.
Yeah. The studio and audience loved the three bumbling knuckleheads and their bloodlessly violent routines, and they quickly got work making more, without Healy. And it was successfully argued that he didn't own the characters the theater company he had got them for when they all worked in the 20s did.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and since the theater
was... It's like when you create something while you're working for, like, 3M or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's not yours.
Not
sorry.
If you did it on company time and company property.
Sorry! And since the theater was getting a cut, they didn't mind if Healy was left out in the cold.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably pissed off, Healy announced that he would start his own Stooges. Again.
That's not a good idea.
Yeah, no. While the new Stooges didn't take off, the market had been cornered by his last creations, Shemp now being replaced by the third Howard brother, Curly. So now you have Mo, Larry, and Curly.
Mm-hmm.
Healy did work throughout the 30s in comedies and drama, opposite such stars as Gene Harlow and Gary Cooper. So, he wasn't a failure. He was just super pissed about the one thing that he should have gotten and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, all that came to a sudden end on December 21st, 1937. Healy was inside the famous Trocadero Club on Sunset Strip, celebrating the birth of his son a few days before, when he got into an altercation with three guys at the bar over an unknown subject. The three guys brutally beat Healy, kicking him repeatedly in the head, ribs, and abdomen, before vanishing into the night. Around 2:30 a.m.
One of them had curly hair.
Around 2:30 a.m., a badly injured and bleeding Healy arrived via taxi at the Plaza Hotel. For incoherent reasons, he babbled at the time, and was met by a professional wrestler named Man Mountain Dean.
This is an... Okay. This is a divergence.
Yeah. Who called a doctor. He was later moved to his nearby home, where he started convulsing violently and died sometime the next day of inflammation of the liver. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
This story's going places. Likely the story would have ended there, though, had it not been for the rumor of the identity of the three who beat him to death. And no, it's not Three Stooges. That would be wonderful.
It's the other three that...
It was Shemp. That would also be entertaining. And Shemp never heard a fly. You don't say anything about Shemp.
It was definitely Shemp.
Likely... So the three were actor Wallace Beery, producer Pat DiCicco, DiCicco, and Albert Broccoli.
Oh, those three
well-known
individuals.
Oh, those so clearly three people.
Yes, those names. Household names, all of them.
Which I will now identify so that we have some context.
Mm-hmm. And we'll pretend for the audience's sake that we have no clue who these people are.
Oh, yeah. No, clearly. Baha. Beery was a man of renowned nasty temper who, according to Mickey Rooney, would literally steal props from active sets he was working on.
Eh, well, Mickey Rooney's a racist, so... I'm kidding, I'm sorry, Mickey Rooney, but you were a terrible Japanese person.
Yeah, that was bad. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. And was the subject of the famous saying, he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch. So, you know, popular.
Wow, that's great. You coined an epithet, but it's that. That's,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Pat DeSico, aside from being a producer and agent, was a member of Lucky Luciano's mafioso outfit.
All right.
And was briefly married to Gloria Vanderbilt in the 40s.
Oh, who wasn't?
The third young man, Albert Cubby Broccoli, wasn't anyone yet.
Yet.
At the time of the murder, he wasn't even involved in Hollywood. This was his first break into Hollywood.
Hey, kid, it's your interview. Here we go.
Stab.
His break coming...
You think this is bad? The ladies have to face the casting couch.
Ooh.
You just have to kill a man.
Well, it's the 30s, so I'm sure that's
Try punching him in the liver a bunch.
His break coming 4 years later when he was hired by as a gopher by Howard Hughes for the set of The Outlaw.
Okay.
So, again, weird. But he started at the very bottom. After killing a man.
Jesus.
He spent that decade working these sorts of jobs behind the scenes. Until the early 50s, he moved to England, chasing some newly provided film subsidies from the British government. It's there that he discovered the work of Ian Fleming, specifically his often vulgar special agent character, James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
While, well, excuse me, plus... Fleming's other work, like Chi Chi and Bang Bang.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
It is weird.
Yeah. While popular burner books, Bond was by no means as well-known or even well-defined then as he is today. Book Bond is a cruel and ugly man. Ugly personality, not physically.
Mm.
Blunt rather than suave. Broccoli saw an opportunity and spent the next decade trying to chase the film rights, eventually partnering with his owner, with their owner, a Canadian named Harry Stoltzman, to create Eon Productions. To this day, every Bond film is produced by Eon, and every one of those movies begins with an Albert R. Broccoli Presents film.
Huh.
Yeah. He died in the late 90s, but his family has held firm control over the company and the rights, and to this day, that's what the family does. The family business is making James Bond.
Bond rights. Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's literally all they do. So, why have you never heard of this before? You'd think that the guy that essentially made James Bond, having murdered someone, would probably be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Enter Eddie Mannix.
I had a feeling we'd be seeing him again.
Before sun came up on the morning of December 22nd, 1937, Mannix was seen at the Trocadero and the Plaza, conducting his own investigation ahead of the cops that resulted in the attending physician to Healy's wound and his death deciding not to sign death certificate or go on the record as to what happened to Healy and what injuries he sustained. The sudden absence of any witnesses at the attack at the most popular and watched club in the city, and the studio bought the coroner declare that the sudden and fatal trauma that Healy had been dealt was the result of chronic alcoholism.
Bruised liver.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All three men walked without any hint of a scandal. And Healy's wife and newborn son were forgotten and left destitute, with funds that were raised to help them going to the Luciano family.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Right down the gutter.
That is brutal.
There you go.
That is brutal.
Yeah. So, like, evil.
That's Hollywood for you.
That's Hollywood. You just couldn't cut it.
Chew you up and spit you out and name Bond movies after you.
So... we've talked about Eddie Mannix threatening to kill pornographers, and you've seen him practically erase a brutal murder from history. And that's where... That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Let's go darker now. What else can he do?
Let's go...
What can't he do?
We're going to slam through a couple and then hit a big one.
World War II, you say?
Yeah, yeah. That includes making sure Judy Garland was always high as a kite.
Oh, that makes me sad.
He was the guy who hooked her and fed her the pills. Gross. Yeah.
That's the part of... Well, that and all the sex abuses are the parts of Hollywood that are the saddest.
Right. He made sure that starlets like Garland, Harlow, and Crawford all got backstreet abortions for any unwanted or uncontracted pregnancies. So if they got pregnant and it wasn't allowed in their contract, they had an abortion forced on them by Eddie Mannix.
Yeah. Just slightly sorted.
Yeah. Just slightly. Just a little. And of course, beating people straight was a thing that had to be done sometimes.
Beating people straight as in beating people...
Until they stop doing the thing that gets them photographed and start dating the starlet that we want you to be seen with. Who was the star of Gone with the Wind? The male. Who was the male in that?
Clark Gable.
Clark Gable was a male hooker before he became famous. And so Eddie Mannix had to erase every mark of that. I didn't include that just because there's so much, mm-hmm. but it stayed in my mind because it's like...
It's okay, we'll do our own research later.
There you go. excuse me. Before,
Clark Gable. Clark Gable.
Pay for gay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I do declare.
I do declare. Myself. For nothing less than a $50 bill.
Jesus.
Yeah, 58 that much now.
Yeah, 1930s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know.
Jesus.
Clark fucking Gable, come on!
To be fair, this is like young Clark Gable.
Are you telling me you would not pay a pretty penny for
I'm saying
Mr. Clark Gable.
So you definitely know someone sat in a theater years later, saw him, and was like, I fucked it. Oh, God.
Hey, I sucked off Clark Gable, I think.
No, that's a Gable end.
That's a Gable. Oh. Anyway.
You're excused from all future episodes.
But kind of none of that, at least when you consider it, none of that really compares to the time he literally killed Superman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not Reeves.
Yes.
Oh, God.
In the 1950s, actor George Reeves, not Christopher Reeves, the original Reeves, George Reeves was one of the most recognizable men in America, thanks to his six-year stint in film and television as Superman. Running from 1952 to 1958, The Adventures of Superman was one of the most popular and successful shows in the country. Owing not only to the character's popularity and Reeves' perfect performance on and off screen, because like, when he was off screen, he would still act like the like virtuous level of Superman. He would never allow like himself to be seen as doing anything than the right thing, mm-hmm. and like he had to he stopped drinking and smoking in the 50s so that kids wouldn't see him doing it.
Damn.
Yeah. Like this is a guy who was like, "No, this part is my life now."
Yeah.
You have to live it. You have to walk it.
Yeah. But due to its high production, budget and shots and effects, shot at the RKO backlot in California, so it wasn't like a TV show that you'd see. Every episode was essentially like a movie.
Yeah.
Like the best that they could do. And actually, if you watch it now, you know you can tell that like this is from the 50s. These are all real effects shots essentially, but they're good.
Okay.
You know they pull it off. For the 50s. and it was even shot in color before most people could afford a color television.
Hmm.
So, like, you can enjoy it now in this dazzling 50s color.
Yeah.
You know? The series itself was based on a 1951 movie starring Reeves called Superman and the Mole Men. Which is the weirdest thing. Like,
bad title.
Oh, horrible title. And was mostly funded by the cereal company Kellogg's. Better than a cigarette company. I was
just surprised it wasn't Superman teaches you not to masturbate. Fucking
how long. Well, that was probably it.
It's also around the time of What's My Line, where, like, everything...
What's My Line?
Everything's a commercial, on a commercial, in a commercial.
Oh, yeah, wait, that's great.
That's still here.
You can put a different pair of glasses on Reeves, and then no one on the panel will know who he is.
Oh, God. They probably play that up.
Put him in a monocle.
Time.
That'd be great. We have no idea. Are you a man or a woman?
The very first I'm not reading this off the script. This is just something I know. The very first television crossover ever was George Reeves as Superman crossing over with Lucy and Desi.
How?
The character Clark Kent shows up to interview Desi for a show, and hijinks ensue, and Superman has to save Lucy from, like, falling off the ledge outside their apartment balcony.
This sounds terrible in every way.
And Desi is just like, my wife is so horrible! And Superman's like, I thought I was Superman. You have to deal with this crazy bitch.
I hope that's a direct quote.
That's a paraphrase of actual joke. And she goes, ah!
Wow.
And doesn't die.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to Superman, we got Star Trek, then.
There you go.
Because yeah.
Lucille Ball bought Star Trek.
Right,
yeah.
That's true.
Or, like, not bought Star Trek, but, like, funded
it. If it wasn't for Superman, then Lucille Ball definitely would have died in that episode.
Which, of course, by the rules of early television meant they had to
die in real life.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. It's like The Matrix.
Yeah, what's his name? Maddox. Eddie Maddox would have killed him.
Gotta make sure.
Mannix?
Mannix. Mannix.
Okay, that, yeah.
Maddox.
The villainous sounding name.
Right?
Yeah.
It's such a name.
Yeah.
It's like, evil name would be like, the Annex. He's like, I'm just going to get rid of you.
Well, like, because his absolute heyday was the 30s, you gotta picture it in, like, 30s voice saying, Mannix!
All right.
Eddie Mannix, see?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's that bastard Mannix! So, a critical success and immense... Wait a minute.
Misty Mannix and a pregnant starlet here to see me.
I'm going to go punch her in the chest.
Yeah, Saturn, see? I got my kicking boots on.
God.
It's only funny because time has passed.
That's the whole point of
this
show.
Of this
it's
show.
It's only funny because time has passed.
Yeah.
All of this is horrible.
No one's going to call you up and be like, you're humanity's greatest monster.
A critical success and immensely popular with the kids, it catapulted George Reeves to stardom, but to his frustration did not land him a further work as he had been typecast as the Big Blue Boy Scout, and no one, not producers or the audience, would accept him as anything but. Like, he tried, and people were like, why is Superman in this? Fuck, you're stupid.
That's kind of his own fault, too. If he'd been smoking and drinking in public, then, like...
Right? People would just be like, oh, it's a prank.
Like, oh, yeah, it's just George Reeves. Like, oh, it's George Reeves playing someone else who's smoking and drinking. Maybe he had to smoke and drink in those parts.
Mm.
And kids are like, why is Superman smoking and drinking? Should have played Jesus, but played Jesus smoking and drinking.
Jim Caviezel can't work anymore.
Confusing.
Because
of
Jesus.
Is it too mean to say, nor should he, for that travesty? Jesus Christ.
That was rough.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, gosh.
This led Reeves to frequent bouts of depression, which he often treated by engaging in a long-term affair with Toni Mannix, Eddie's wife.
Fool!
Oh.
How did that seem like... Well, I guess he was depressed and had a death wish, sure.
The entire time he was leaping over tall buildings as Superman. I mean, the entire decade.
He was leaping into bed with Eddie Mannix's wife.
Oh,
see?
Yeah, exactly. Possibly behind his back or possibly
Mr.
with his
Mannix,
consent.
Mr. Mannix, your slut wife is here.
But literally, Eddie Mannix, there's a theory that Eddie Mannix was so busy working that he was just like, yeah, fuck my wife, I'm not.
So you're talking about Blanche Devereaux's backstory.
This is correct.
Okay.
Actually, that may be where it's pulled from.
That's great.
Because it's the 50s. Now, this is one of the messier stories of Hollywood, with no clear answers, just a timeline.
All right.
So, 1958, John Hamilton, the actor who portrayed Perry White, who is the editor of the Daily Planet in Superman...
Great, it was his ghost.
Exactly, yeah. So the show had four reoccurring characters. It had Superman, Clark Kent, mm-hmm. Lois Lane, mm-hmm. Jimmy Olsen, mm-hmm. Perry White. Mm-hmm. It mostly was...
No, Cat, what's her name? Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
She's for the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Cat Grant. She wasn't invented until, I want to say, the 80s. Nerding.
God bless Tracy Scoggins.
Yeah.
There's your nerd.
For the most part, the show would be, like, half an office sitcom, but like a 50s office sitcom. And then the other half would be, here's our set piece of Superman doing something.
That sounds tremendously awful.
Yeah, so they'd have bad 50s jokes and like a bit of relationship humor. And then they'd hear on the wire that something is happening. And Perry would turn and be like, Lois, Clark, go take care of it. Go cover it. And Lois would turn and be like, where the fuck has Clark gone for like the 107th time?
This happens every time something terrible happens.
Yeah. And yes. She'd go and cover it and he'd
hard
fly
to believe
off.
A woman who can't tell the difference between someone with glasses on and glasses off.
Wait a second.
Who can't tell the same person? Oh my god, where did Fred go?
Who is Fred? This woman?
Oh thank god, there you are.
Monocle, please.
Anyway, John Hamilton, the actor who portrayed Perry White, died of a heart failure at age 71. At this point, there had been plans to film at least two more seasons of the show. This was season 8. But production was halted so that they could search for a new Perry. So while not necessarily out of a job, Reeves found himself looking for work until production resumed. Mm-hmm. Which could be a year, could be 2 years. Whatever.
Well, sure, if he's not out there helping to search for Perry White. Jesus, Reeves.
As mentioned before, work was hard to find, as he had could only be seen as Superman, a character he was increasingly eager to move past. Plus, he was reaching the age of 45, and, you know...
He's getting too old for smoking, drinking Jesus on top of it.
And plus, he had to wear the Superman costume, is tight spandex. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 45... Maybe you don't want to have to work out to look good in spandex.
Might be starting to be getting a little unforgiving.
Oh, and he's a round Superman. He is a very round Superman. He always was compared to now. He's more barrel-chested than, like, muscular.
Yeah.
What's your kryptonite? Oh, pie.
The stress also affected his relationship with Tony Mannix.
Eventually he can only leap over bungalows.
Oh. Just a second.
Race after a train?
Guess we're not a speeding one now.
Yeah.
Just a train.
I'm gonna sit and take my seat instead of trying to race it.
Can stop a car just by sitting.
Faster than a speeding normal person. A little faster.
Kind of fast. Okay, never mind. He's not actually moving. The stress also affected his relationship with Tony Mannix, and the two broke it off after their long-term affair just weeks before Reeves suddenly announced his plan to marry a young and daring Hollywood socialite, Lenore Lemon. News that reportedly crushed Tony Mannix, who was still married to Eddie in a mutually emotionally supportive marriage. If that's the case of what happened, if Mannix knew of it, he supported it 100% and supported his wife. He just didn't have time for her.
That's nice.
Right? It's complicated, but kind of like, okay, so there's at least one
doing
person
a lot of other things.
He was definitely busy. Yeah.
But
well, yeah, don't be jealous of someone if you know you can't take care of their needs, sure.
Right?
Exactly. You know.
I thought you were going to say, don't be jealous of my boogie.
Be jealous of anyone named Tony's boogie.
Yeah.
So, of course, still loving his wife, if she was crushed and pissed, he might take it out.
That's amazing. Doesn't murder someone because they're sleeping with his wife, but because they stopped sleeping with his wife.
Yeah.
Now, see, that's more respectable than the traditional cliche.
Just 3 days before the pair were to be wedded, Lenore and George got into a public argument at a popular restaurant frequented by the Hollywood elite. Upon returning home, Reeves went to bed while Lenore entertained some friends who came over, drinking and partying well into the night. Around 1 a.m., Reeves awoke and came downstairs to complain about the noise, but stayed for a few drinks, apparently in a nasty mood the whole time. Increasingly the butt of his friend's jokes as the night went on, he went back to bed around 2:30 a.m., shortly after which a gunshot was heard and he was found with a bullet wound in his head, slumped backwards, like horizontally, over his bed.
Okay.
The testimony of those present soon became an absolute mess.
Huh?
First, they hesitated more than an hour to contact police.
Always a healthy sign.
Always healthy. Fantastic. And they said it was because it was too early in the morning.
The police station doesn't open until at least four.
Second, they began to rat on each other, with one saying that they had been directly joking about George shooting himself, allegedly listening to him shuffle upstairs, open the drawer where he kept the handgun, and upon hearing the shot, Lenore was alleged to have said, "See, told you he'd do it."
I wish my aghast face could be carried across this podcast. My lord.
That's one of the alleged ways this happened. Like,
Christ.
Another story had Lenore outside the bedroom door, and when he killed himself, she quickly stumbled downstairs yelling, "Tell them I was down here. Tell them I was down here."
That's slightly better. Maybe.
Investigators discovered no fingerprints on the gun and no gunpowder residue on George's hand.
Well, you know, sometimes when you shoot yourself, the force of the gun recoiling smudges the prints from your hand.
No, it was clean.
Well, then, I don't know. Maybe he didn't kill himself.
The bullet that killed him was embedded in the ceiling while the shell casing was under his back. Two more bullets were found in the wall, despite the shots never having been heard, and his body had unexplained bruises around the head, chest, and back. The death was officially ruled a suicide, but rumors swirled around it for decades. Lenore eventually drank herself to death in New York in the early 90s, often accused by many as having driven him to kill himself through domestic, like, emotional abuse. But far more interesting is that 7 years before she died, Tony Mannix lay in her deathbed, and she confessed one of two things, one of which is probably true,
okay,
but we don't know which she actually said.
Okay.
The first is that Eddie killed or had George killed. Like, he killed him himself or had him killed.
Mm-hmm.
Either for the affair or for breaking his wife's heart, depending on what he knew.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe both, because he's Annie fucking Mannix.
Mm.
You probably knew both.
Right? Just, yeah, why not? I want to kill someone tonight.
And I'm happy.
I'm bored.
I've been double wronged. I've been cuckolded, and now my wife is mad.
Yeah. The second is that Tony admitted that she had killed George herself over being dumped, using her husband's mob contacts without him knowing, and that the missing time between the death and arrival of police was bought by Eddie Mannix, who found out from the mob that they were being used for contract in his name, and he had to clean up his wife's mess and protect her from prosecution.
Amazing.
And that's just three stories about Hollywood's most notorious fixer, Eddie Mannix.
And that's the things that got out.
That's great.
Yeah.
Like, in parts, pieces, or bits.
Exactly. And those are just, like, the biggest stuff. There's more. And there's fragments, yeah.
And then there's the things you don't know.
Exactly, the things that were fully removed.
Christ, thank God this is an old goss show. We have to talk about Epstein. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the bad things could happen if you go into... Epstein didn't kill himself.
Of course he didn't kill himself. Everyone knows he didn't kill himself.
Right? How bizarre.
He signed his own fate many years ago. That's the way I look at it.
That's probably
a lot
most...
different from killing yourself.
But he signed his fate as to where he was headed a long fucking time ago.
Yes, we'll see if any particularly high-ranking members of any families are going to be caught up in this next.
Yes, who aside from the British royal family can we see involved in this?
Tune in next time to not find out, because we talk about old goss.
Although we could talk about old royal goss. Ooh. Like how one of the King Georges died from a speedball.
Speedball.
It's cocaine and
heroin, I think.
Yeah. So you put it together and they slam it into their veins, and he was so near death that the physicians decided to euthanize him. So that's how they killed him. They gave him a speedball.
That's less fun than what I was thinking the story would be.
we'll get into
it. Tune in next time to find out why it's actually more fun than the story you thought it would be.
I already have like six stories that are only about 100 years old in my head immediately.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of old-timey voices in this podcast now that it's been more clearly defined, and I look forward to that.
Yeah. We like a crank gramophone.
Oh my
start
god. I'll have to look into getting like that sound effect. Be really good.
Yes.
Anyway,
how to broadcast in sepia tone. That's perfect.
Well, the intro video that I designed for it is all old, unused, and like forgotten paparazzi images from like the mid-50s and stuff.
Nice.
So it's all in black and white, and oh, I love it.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And I'll send you a link once it's up.
Please do.
Woo! Once again, thank you very much for listening to Tales from the Gutter. You can find more of my work, Mickey's, at patreon.com/hereyego. I can get it right. What about you?
Oh, I'm not judging. I don't even have a platform, but I've been Blake, and it's been real nice.
There you go. Anything from the peanut gallery?
Nuts.
That's adorable.
That's it. That's Brent. Thanks for having me.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for listening, and catch us the next time when we're going to talk about some royal ascensions.
Thank you.
Sure, it's mud and dirt and all that. But the all-new Toyota Tundra TRD Pro is redefining grit with unrelenting torque, courtesy of the iForce Max hybrid powertrain, connectivity thanks to an impressive 14-inch touchscreen, and total confidence to tow just about anything, anywhere. Yes, the all-new Toyota Tundra is the new definition of grit. Learn more at toyota.ca.
Hey, Nova Scotia. There are plenty of ways to get outdoors and show your local love this winter. Why not get outside for an adventure? You could hit the slopes at one of Nova Scotia's incredible ski hills, head out for a hike along the coast, or let all your stress just melt away at a Nordic spa. Visit NovaScotia.com for more great ideas and packages. And no matter how you choose to make the most of winter, be sure to stay safe and support local.